This is an AMI podcast.
Hey guys, welcome along to another episode of Double Tap. It's Friday. It is the 5th of April, 2024. Coming up, all of the headline news with a very special guest reader today. And Matt Ater from Vespero joins us to talk CSUN meeting Stevie Wonder and more.
You're listening to Double Tap,
more.
Your daily accessible technology more. Show. Now, here's your hosts, Stephen Scott and Sean Priest.
You know, if we ever did one of those like extra podcast things that some people do, you know, they do like an extra on the podcast, I just call it more.
More. We want more.
Just not we want more. No one wants
no,
no one wants
nobody wants more of us. No.
I just call it more. I mean, I say this, we've got YouTube, right? We're doing YouTube. So I suppose that's the more bit, isn't it?
Is that
the
more? How much more do you want, Stephen Scott?
How much can
you
I give?
The world?
That's the question. How much more can I give?
We're getting very deep here and metaphysical. Stop it. I don't
Must
like
be the end
it.
Of the week. Listen, lots
Happy
to
Friday.
Talk about today. Matt Ater's joining us a bit later. He's here to talk about CSUN. He's also in London at the minute, over in our part of the world, in the UK. He's visiting RNIB, my old place of work. And he is talking to them about getting these JAWS for kiosks out the door. I'm not suggesting that Matt's rocked up with a truck and sort of trying to shift them. You know,
and a dolly, wheeling them out, nailing them to walls and whatever else. We don't think that's happening. Look, this is so exciting because basically what we're talking about here is making food more accessible. And I am all for that, obviously.
For food. More food.
Accessible food.
Accessible food. What food isn't accessible? I'd say spaghetti.
Oh, that's true.
That's not accessible food, is it? I mean, you obviously, no one eats spaghetti cold. So you've got heat, which is kind of built inside. It's kind of encased with the spaghetti.
I'd abandon this now, Stephen Scott. Then, I don't know where you're going to go with
just,
this.
You're asking me, you're saying accessible food, and I'm saying I would say spaghetti is the most inaccessible food. Spaghetti, you are ableist.
Okay, there you go. Let's start a hashtag and a campaign against spaghetti for some reason. Wow. Mr. F's here, shush.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. Mr. F is here. He is our special guest today as he joins us to read the news. Mr. F, over to you.
Thanks, guys. Hey, everyone. It's Mr. F here. While eclipse watchers look to the skies on April 8th, people who are blind or have low vision will be able to hear and feel the celestial event wherever they are in the world. Sound and touch devices will be available at public gatherings when the total solar eclipse crosses North America, which is when the moon blots out the sun for a few minutes. A device called the Light Sound Box will translate the visual light in the sky into audio notes, with high flute notes depicting the sunlight, and as the moon covers the sun, the mid-range notes will echo those of a clarinet. The ensuing darkness will appear audibly as a low clicking sound. There will be at least 750 of these devices being made available to locations hosting eclipse events across Canada, the U.S., and Mexico. The Perkins Library, associated with the Perkins School for the Blind in Watertown, Massachusetts, plans to broadcast the changing tones of the Lightbox device over Zoom for members to listen online and by telephone. Perrin McCormack from the organization told Double Tap what else they're doing on the day.
Our teachers have planned a solar eclipse watch party on our track with a variety of activities for students and staff to participate in. They'll be using a light sound device which sonifies the eclipse, so depending on the level of brightness outside, it will play a high pitch for when there's full light, and as the moon covers the sun, the pitch will drop and sound much lower. There are also going to be some tactile experiences so students can understand what's happening as the moon covers the sun. So it's super exciting, and our staff and students are all excited to participate and watch the eclipse.
IRA, the Visual Interpreter Service, will offer a live audio description commentary via YouTube and its IRA Explorer app from an event held in Rochester, New York. Janine Stanley from the company explains how that event came to be.
In 2017, a lady named Kirsten Smith in Rochester, New York, was going through vision loss. And during the total eclipse, she was thinking, this isn't for me. I don't care. I can't see anything. And then she realized that there was, in fact, a lot going on during that total eclipse, including parties and celebrations in her area, plus the incredible view of the sky. And she said, I'm never going to let this happen to anybody again. So on April the 8th, from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern time, Ira will be part of Rochester's Total Eclipse of the Park all-inclusive event, where we will be describing the time of totality of the eclipse over Rochester and all of the festivities that they're going to be having there. And you can tune in by subscribing to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/C/IRAIO, that's A-I-R-A-I-O, or look at your IRA app for new developments in how you can watch the solar eclipse.
Elsewhere, others will experience a solar event through the sense of touch with the Cadence tablet from Indiana's Tactile Engineering. The tablet is about the size of a cell phone with rows of dots that pop up and down. It can be used for a variety of purposes, reading Braille, feeling graphics and movie clips, and playing video games. And also listen out on April 8th to AMI Audio. Hey, that's me! Where we'll have described coverage of the event coming up. In the mainstream tech world this week, Google has agreed to a proposed class action settlement where it will destroy or de-identify billions of records of web browsing data collected from users in its private incognito mode. The settlement also mandates improved disclosures about Google's data collection practices in incognito mode. If approved, it could apply to 136 million Google users. Microsoft is making its business messaging app Teams available globally as a standalone product separate from Office 365. The change aims to provide more clarity for customers after already being implemented in the EU last year. Existing customers should be able to keep current bundled deals or choose new options. And on the gaming front, Microsoft is testing a new AI-powered Xbox chatbot that can automate support tasks like answering queries from documentation and even processing game refunds. Expanded recent testing suggests this Xbox support virtual agent could one day handle all Xbox customer support. OpenAI is offering limited access to a text-to-voice generation platform it developed called Voice Engine, which can create a synthetic voice based on a 15-second clip of someone's voice. The AI-generated voice can read out text prompts on command in the same language as the speaker or in a number of other languages. While there are many legitimate fears about this type of technology, disability advocate Colin Hughes says this could open up a whole new world of opportunities for disabled people like him.
I've always wanted to be a YouTuber, but I haven't got a strong enough voice to be one. But I can do things like edit and record video and so on, but I couldn't front a YouTube video. But with this kind of technology, I'm starting to think I could do a lot. I could do the voice presentation, I could do the filming, I could do the editing, that I could become a full-blown YouTuber. Who would have thought?
And finally, an exhibition to give blind and partially sighted people the chance to experience photography in an accessible and immersive way takes place this weekend. World Unseen is the brainchild of well-known camera company Canon. The European arm of their business has arranged the event, which will feature photographs taken by world-renowned photographers. The images will be accompanied by elevated prints, audio descriptions, soundscapes, and Braille for a tactile experience to help visitors connect with the powerful images. Other images would be obscured in different ways to convey to sighted people the different types of visual impairment, from glaucoma to diabetic retinopathy. Matthew Faulkner is a marketing director for Canon and told us about the technology behind the exhibition.
We use a technology which we call a flatbed printer, which is a very large device, you know, a production device for, it's normally used for creating signage and display graphics and point of sale. And I think many years ago, one or two creative and clever customers of ours realized that if you repeatedly print the same job on top of each other, then you create a textured surface. The ink is a UV cured ink, so it's very hard. So printing repeated layers enable them to, kind of a trick to create a texture.
As part of the event, a number of videos were created featuring well-known names in the blind world. AMI's own Lawrence Gunther was one of the lucky people to get early access to the exhibition for the film. He told us it was nothing like he'd experienced before.
You know, I used to be able to see when I was a kid, even though I was registered blind when I was 8, I had a fair bit of sight until I was in my early 20s, and I lost all my sight in my 40s. But this is almost like seeing as good as you can with your fingers.
This is a whole new way of seeing. It's beautiful because you got the textures, you've got the raised and lowered areas, but it's still a picture. I've never felt anything like this before in my life.
But what I'm feeling here and the differences in the skin texture, it feels a lot like the animal.
People are going to go nuts for this.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. I'm so privileged to be here and experience this.
Oh, man.
This is my dream.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
And you can view more of those, frankly, rather emotional videos online by searching for Canon World Unseen. That's Double Tap News this week. I'm Mr. F. Back to you guys.
Mr. F. Oh, well done, Mr. F. Well done.
Quite right. I've got to say, I thought he did a fantastic job. And I'm not just saying that because he's the boss. I honestly thought that was absolutely amazing. What a job.
A little bit patronizing, I think. But okay, fine. No, fair enough.
No, I don't think so. Just saying. Well done, Mr. F.
I hope Grace gets better soon. You're not feeling too well, Grace. So, I mean, you know, she says that, but, you know, I kind of think, you know, Friday.
Friday,
dart.
Long weekend.
Yeah.
No, we missed you,
Monday-itis.
Grace.
Monday-itis.
Get well soon.
We'll find out on Monday. Anyway. listen, lots of interesting stories to pick out there. I mean, honestly, we could talk for about an hour just on some of those.
Yes.
That Canon story is quite interesting, though, isn't it? The World Unseen event. I must say, just to pick up on something off that, because we talked in the news about the story, but one of the things we didn't get a chance to pick up on in the story itself was the picture that was that Lawrence in particular was looking at, and it was or feeling, I guess, which was a rhinoceros. And he was talking on Access Tech Live with us. You should go back and check the interview. It's on the website. You can get it on our website, doubletaponair.com. But it was a really interesting description because he said not only did it feel and have that tactile nature, it also felt like a rhinoceros. That was the other nature, a part of the nature of this. It almost felt like you were touching the animal, which is also kind of incredible.
No, it's really interesting because there was a lot of emotion in the clips that I've seen around this event. And, you know, maybe we're getting a bit cynical, but we've seen tactile imagery before. But there does seem to be an extra level to this. Maybe it's to do with the printing method there that they're using, but the texture or whatever it is, it does seem to, I don't know, people seem to really enjoy this way of enjoying photos.
Yeah, it's like we've seen this before from companies when they build these kind of videos. They tend to tug at the heartstrings, but you know what? We know a lot of these people that were actually in these films. I mean, like Lawrence Gunther and Lucy Edwards and others, and those people, I don't think they would make that up. You know, these are real people, you know? So to me, it's a case
that's
of
right.
They genuinely must have got something. And I think that's what it is. I think it's that it's almost natural what they're touching. It almost feels like it's the real thing.
Yeah.
In the way that if you're looking at a really high quality resolution image, it's like looking at the real thing. And this is what Canon seemed to have tried to encapsulate with this. But it sounds like a very interesting exhibition. If I was in London, I would be heading there immediately. I mean, I say that, of
definitely.
Course, you know I wouldn't, because, you know, I'd never leave the house.
No, I would. I want to get my hands on this. Yeah, I want to feel something.
Right, come on, Canon, send Sean a rhinoceros.
And emotionally, I want to feel something.
I want to feel a rhino.
Okay.
Hang on, spaghetti is ableist, and I want to
Stop
feel
it.
A rhino. I think we're creating a lot of hashtags today.
I think that's great for a t-shirt. I also want to pick up on the voice engine story, because we talked about this and we were quite pessimistic about it. We were saying, well, what's the, you know, AI and the problems when it comes to fakery, you know, fake audio, fake video, fake images. But I think Colin brought up such a fantastic point there about his, you know, possibility of being able to create YouTube videos, have a voice on YouTube. And of course, I thought about the personal voice aspect of it and, you know, people with speaking difficulties. But it's not until you hear Colin talk about it and you hear the passion of which he talks about it. And I think, yeah, absolutely. You know what? Maybe, you know, some of the negatives are worth it.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult, isn't it? We're going to talk a little bit about this with Matt later. But, you know, there is a kind of moral question sometimes when this kind of technology comes along. There's the sort of, is it the right thing? Is it a good thing? And then there's the moral argument. But then, of course, when you bring accessibility into it, it kind of looks past all that. You know, you look at this and you go, well, hang on a minute. This is making it the potential for him, Colin in this case, to be able to go and do something he could never have done before. Without this technology, he would never, he said himself, he would never be able to do this. So, you know, you kind of have to look past that. And I guess it's like everything, right? You could say the internet is bad. You could always point at an example online of a website and say, look, this is terrible. But is the solution to that get rid of all of it? Or is it to say, well, look,
that's true.
There's good and bad. Yeah. There's good and bad in everyone.
In everyone. Yeah.
Who was that again?
Next line.
Ebony and Ivory. Stevie Wonder.
Of course it is.
There you go. That's it. Oh. I'm like that there, Shazam.
Well done. Stephen Shazam Scott there.
Yes, Stephen Shazam Scott. That's not easy to say.
No,
especially
if you
get Sean into that. Yes, I'm Stephen Shazam Scott, Sean.
Whew, yes, you are, Stephen. Well done.
I don't know if you've been following the ongoing saga, but it's turning into a bit of a soap opera around the Voice Stream Reader app. I mean, look, guys, if you want the app, buy it. If you don't want it, don't buy it. I mean, I think this is pretty clear cut, right? People are getting all excited about it and wanting to get the app taken down, I think, because they're going to the app store and complaining. You know, this is not the way to do things, guys. Come on. I mean, to me, this is the way, surefire way of having this app deleted altogether. I think ultimately the best thing here is just to make a decision, buy it or don't. Because if the app was taken out of the store, well, that's not going to make anybody happy. So I don't know how that resolves itself. But I think it does open up an interesting conversation about digital licensing and what digital licensing and buying a license for something means.
Yes.
I don't think there's any clear-cut answer on this because I think we're still, even though we've been doing this for a long time, I do feel that we still haven't quite got the model right yet. You know, a lot of people liken this to buying software. I think someone on the show said this the other day. You know, it's like, you know, if I walk into a store, as we used to do, and you bought a box with software in it, no one was going to come along and take that box away from you. You'd paid your money, and if you wanted to buy the update, you could. And if you didn't buy the update, you could continue using the software as you could. And I think that's a bad analogy because it was a different time when we did that. The update was the update. Okay. Well, yeah, because now you're not just updating one piece of software, you're updating it across multiple devices. You have those more continual updates, which we're all pleased about. We're all happy with that. I mean, can you imagine if we still had the old model where you had to go and buy a CD every time there was an update? I'd never be out the store.
Well, actually, that's a good point that I never really considered. But back in the day, you didn't really get many updates as you do now.
No. I mean, an update was a major update.
Yeah, that's right.
There's so many logistics involved in actually getting that update to people. Whereas when we started having it over the air and it was digital, it changed everything. It allowed the speed of those updates to come through and regularity of them, also smaller updates. It wasn't, you know, like you got an update to a computer, which meant that you had to take a day off work to perform that update. Although in saying that, I have done a few Windows updates where I've thought, I need today off.
Stop it. But stop it. I think the point is, when you purchase some physical media, let's say CD, DVD, whatever it may be, it was you had it in your hands. You owned something physically. Now, in digital, of course, you don't get that. And I think a lot of people don't know, you're not actually buying it. It's almost like a license agreement. You're allowed to use it. I'm sure there was a case of where some Disney movies were removed from some service. And if you had bought them, you simply lost them. They are not yours. And that is something that is being talked about a lot more. I noticed recently, actually, timing, talking of Voice Dream Reader, that Accursed Farms, who's a YouTuber, is talking about he started a new campaign called Stop Killing Games, because there's lots of games companies that are just turn off the servers for certain well-known games, the latest one being something called The Crew. Now, it's sold millions and millions of copies. yet they've announced that at a certain date, they're simply turning off the servers and it won't work anymore. And that's it. And people have paid, you know, $100 for this game and they simply can't play it. Now, that can't be right, surely. I mean, this whole digital ownership thing is something that is being pushed into the mainstream. And from our point, the Voice Dream Reader. It's very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it is that is a much more suitable analogy for it. And I think that's what I'm seeing, like you're saying, more and more. I'm seeing it in music as well. You know, and you can see it in music all the time. If I buy an album on iTunes, say, and then that artist... say that artist is alive and well. Let's say it's Taylor Swift, right? Because everyone talks and loves Taylor Swift.
I'm a Swiftie.
Are you? I remember the country enough, music days.
I'm very slow moving. Yes.
Yes. I thought slothy was more your thing than Swiftie. But no, I mean, if I bought a Taylor Swift album today, and then Taylor Swift had a massive falling out with Apple. Remember she did that? Was it Spotify she fell out with at one time?
Yes.
And I say falling out with, I mean, there was a good reason for the falling out.
Well, she's not alone. Other artists have as well.
No, that's right.
Yes.
But, you know, so she had fallen out with Spotify or her company had or whatever it was. And the music was taken off. Now, it's one thing on a streaming service, because to me, that's like a rental. You know, you're not buying it. So if a music comes off a streaming service and it was there today and it's not there tomorrow, okay, whatever, right? That's up to me then to decide if it's worth going to the other option. It's not like it's the only one in town. I could go to Amazon, or I could go to Tidal, or I could go to Spotify, or I could go wherever I wanted to go. But when you buy the album, there is an expectation that when you go into your library, it'll be there. But if, in this example, Taylor Swift had an argument with Apple, the album could disappear, even though I've bought it. So I do think there's a conversation to be had around what digital licensing is. Because I'm with you. I mean, I this is where I do think that the analogy doesn't work if you compare it to physical media, because it clearly doesn't apply. But maybe it should. Maybe it should. And I think that, you know, oftentimes people say, well, it's just, this is the way it is now. But I don't know if that necessarily has to be the case. You know, I don't know how you get around this, of course, because there are a lot of issues involved here. I mean, it's not this. Yes. This isn't even up to the individual companies, right? So let's just say the Taylor Swift example again. She falls out with Apple. You know, Apple can't do anything about that. If she says, I want my music off that platform, then what can you do? There's nothing they can do. So if you lose that album, it's on them. Now, of course, that's different to what's going on with an app like Voice Stream Reader, because they control that app. It's their app. The only solution is, and this is why I mentioned the whole thing about the App Store, is because, you know, if people start complaining to the App Store saying that, you know, essentially, I think the argument is that, you know, that they're breaking rules and regulations of the App Store. I don't think that's actually strictly true, because the language on this is very vague.
Yes, it is.
But
guidelines.
Yeah, well, yeah, and it's called guidelines for a reason, which I think lets everybody off the hook a little bit, Apple and the developer.
Apple can pretty much do what they want at that point.
But what is the discretion there? What is the discretion? Because they can go to the company and say, look, don't do this again. The company could say, well, no, we have to. We need to. Apple's only response, surely, at that point can be, well, it has to come out the store. And I go back to this point. Is that what we want? Do we want to do that? That's not, for me, the solution to this. Because to me, that then takes the app away from everybody. And if that is your measure of success, then... well, I'd maybe look for a new measure of success.
It's a very interesting discussion, though. I mean, if you take it to physical, if a company came and took it back off you, I mean, you would be upset by that. And it's kind of the same in a digital realm as well. If a company says, nope, that's gone now. Well, hang on, I thought that was mine.
Well, it's funny, it's funny you say that, because this is actually exactly what happened to me when I got my satellite television package here in the UK through the Sky Broadcasting Company. And when I paid for the service and I paid for the install, one of the things I found interesting was there was no upfront cost and there was no installation cost. And I thought, oh, that's great, and didn't really pay much attention to it. You know me, details, but who cares, right? Sign it, get it in.
T's and C's, yeah.
When's the guy coming with a big van and, you know, coming with a satellite dish? And so, you know, the guy comes, installs it and all the rest of it. And I said to him, so what happens if these boxes break down? Because in the previous case, when one had broken down, it cost me quite a bit to replace it. And he said, oh, it doesn't matter, because you only rent the box anyway. You don't actually own it. And I was quite surprised by that. So I was like, all right, hang on. So, and he said, oh, and you remember, if anything changes with these boxes, they will come back and they'll take them away. You know, so if you don't pay your bill, they'll take them away. If they change the hardware, they'll come and take it away and replace it. And, you know, there's benefits to that. And, you know, in that particular example, there are some benefits to that. But equally, I think the ownership model seems to be changing a little bit. And we're starting to see this in physical as well. And I think we'll see it with cars eventually as well. We'll move away from having ownership of vehicles. We'll rent or we will subscribe to. Essentially, the world is moving to a subscription model. Everything is moving to subscription model.
Yes, it is.
I just don't know if that's good or bad.
All property is theft. And there we go. What a great way to start the weekend.
Listen,
we can own nothing.
And Matt Ater is joining us next. We're going to talk about everything about CSUN, him meeting Stevie Wonder, and also his work he's doing with the RNIB in the UK around Jaws for Kiosks, which is why he's in London. We'll find out more about that next.
Follow Double Tap on social media at Double Tap On Air and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts and email us feedback@doubletaponair.com. We'll be right back. Call the Double Tappers now, 1-877-803-4567 or email us feedback@doubletaponair.com.
And time now to catch up with Matt Ater, friend of the show. We've got lots to talk about. Of course, your trip to CSUN. We're going to talk about you meeting Stevie Wonder there. Also, what's going on at Jaws and, of course, with ZoomText and all those other wonderful pieces of software you're involved in. And, of course, Jaws for Kiosk, which has some big news this week. We did, of course, talk a lot previously about Jaws for Kiosk when you and I met last year in London. You're back in London again. It is good to talk to you, Matt. Hope you're well.
I'm doing great, and it's great to have both of you.
Yeah, excellent. I know you don't normally get a chance to meet Sean, do you?
No. Sean usually escapes out on these things, so it's really great that he's here.
There is a reason for that, Matt, is that you're constant bullying about my NVDA usage. But, you know, we'll skip over that for now. We'll make friends. Everything is fine.
I just want to know have you tried Picture Smart AI yet? No. Okay. Then there we go.
It's on my to-do list. I hear it's a very good feature, though.
Well done.
Saved myself, I think, there.
I think you got with that one sort of, yeah. Okay, so lots going on. You're in London, and the reason you're there is because of a partnership you've developed with the RNIB around Jaws Kiosks. Tell us more about that.
Yep. So one of the divisions of Vispero called TPG Interactive is the, or TPGI for short, is the division who distributes and consults around kiosks. And we just solidified a partnership with RNIB to be the exclusive distributor in the UK for Jaws for Kiosk. And this will be both Windows and Android. And we're just thrilled to have them as a partner because I think they bring the connection to the community, the connection to industry, something we don't have physically on the ground here in the UK, especially when it comes to industry like travel, hospitality, retail. RNIB is positioned for it. People come to them all the time from those industries, financial included in there. And so I think we love the fact that we've solidified this partnership and found them to be a perfect partner for opening the doors to the UK market.
The requirement of making these kiosks accessible, of course, it's a laudable project. Of course, it's important. Of course, we need it. But I also wonder, in this age of apps, would it be advisable to go to companies and say, look, why don't we help you make your app accessible so that you can do everything you can do on that kiosk or that tablet in the hotel room or whatever it is via your own smartphone? That surely must be possible.
So there are places that do that. There are times when you walk up to a kiosk where there could be a QR code and you scan the QR code with your phone and can do all the same stuff. Like if you went to a restaurant and ordered on a kiosk, you could have just ordered on your app and said pick up.
Yeah.
So that I don't think any of that stuff is changing. But we can't assume everybody, I know this is shocking to you guys, even though 95% of the world has a smartphone, we can't assume that everybody can use it.
Yeah,
you know,
and I'm not saying they are. And I know I'll get emails from people who'll say, ah, but hang on, Stephen, no, everyone has a smartphone, stop going down this road. You know, I'm sitting with my Blind Shell Classic or my Doro phone or whatever
it is. That's a smartphone.
Okay, well, whatever. But the point is, you're sitting there with that phone. Maybe it can't do that job. Okay, fine. Or maybe you don't have a smartphone. Maybe you don't care for a smartphone. Fine. But that is exactly why we need to have the accessible kiosks, and we need to have all the other, the whole process. I'm not saying either or. I'm saying, why can't we also have this as an option? Because it seems to me as if that doesn't get considered as much. And I think for a lot of us who are blind people, who are comfortable with our smartphones, having an accessible app would make a heck of a lot more sense than trying to stand at, you know, at a 12-foot kiosk, tapping away, hoping for
it's
the best. Well,
it's not 12-foot, just to be clear. I want to make sure.
Stephen Scott
says it is.
This is
not just for NBA players. But
in my head, it's 12-foot tall, and I'm standing there, you know, 98-inch TV on its side.
And this is why
away.
I always laugh when people say, "Could you add low vision features too?" And I'm like, but it's 12 feet tall. Who's going to...
You can see it from space.
But, I mean, as long as the company knows, okay, so we've made that kiosk accessible in location, so we don't need to worry about accessibility on our app as well. I mean...
No, I don't think that that's the case. No. That, I don't think the intent is to tell someone, you know, I'm going to be at a restaurant show coming up in May, and I plan on wearing a t-shirt about loyalty. You know, accessibility equals loyalty for people with disabilities. And so, but on the back, it's going to have pictures of a menu, a braille menu, a picture of a smartphone, a picture of a website, and a picture of a kiosk, because all of those things are part of your experience, no matter who you are.
But that's the message that never seems to get to companies, isn't it? That's the problem. That there's almost a sense of...
It's the full experience.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And the full experience is something, when I go to a restaurant, and they say to me, hey, I've got a Braille menu. Now, my reading speed of Braille is so slow that it would take me 3 days to get through that menu, right? So I'm not going to be able to do that in any kind of useful way. So my issue is when they say, oh, well, I've got the Braille menu. And I say, okay, large print, or have you got it, you know, in another format, or is it even on a website somewhere I can go get it? They almost look at you as if, well, hang on, we made the Braille menu. We did it. We crossed off the blind people. So what's your problem? It's a constant education. I understand that, but you know it has to be dealt with on a business level. It has to be dealt with at the corporate level.
Are you
level.
Asking for Matt to fix that?
Yes.
So if you can sort that out, Matt, please.
I will. I'll get it done next week. Get it done next week.
Matt, let's move on and talk about JAWS itself, because of course, Picture Smart AI comes in this year, or has come in this year, and everyone's very excited about it. Lots of great commentary about that. What else is going on? What else is what's new? What's happening? What are you telling us? What's the breaking news?
I'll say this. I thought Michael Babcock was it that did the
Babcock? Yeah, Michael Babcock. Yeah, did a review.
He did a great demo a couple weeks ago on your show, and then of course Ryan jumped on for Picture Smart, and Sean will be using it soon, I'm sure.
Highly unlikely.
Downloading it now.
So I'm looking forward to what's coming next in that. And obviously I can't, you know, I'm not in the software anymore like I was when I first jumped on your show a few years ago. I was running software, and now Ryan's running it. So I can't share what's not out there yet, but I think there's going to be some really cool stuff. I think, you know, the discussion around AI, I'm not going to go down the path of the discussion of privacy around AI. There's plenty of that happens in, regular ether in terms of the internet. But in terms of what it can provide to us is still so amazing. And the question is, how soon will it be as fast as we want it to be? Because right now we're just, you know, dying for it to be instant, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, the some of the things that I think I saw out of CSUN that were related to the excitement is stuff like the split braille stuff, the smart picture smart AI. Those are the kinds of things that we're seeing a lot of interest right now. I think the big focus going forward is some areas around AI. You'll see some more stuff throughout the year coming up, and I'm really excited about those kinds of things.
Yeah, it's clearly, you know, it's funny. I was thinking about this the other day. We were talking about AI over on Access Tech Live, and we were chatting about the impact that it will have on the disability community. But I often think it's the other way around as well. I think disabled people often lead the conversations on so many of these tech topics. Maybe we don't realize it, maybe others don't realize it, but when you see the advances for people with autism, for people who are deaf, the potential that AI has to make their lives better is huge. And that will influence future technologies in the mainstream world. And that is going to be incredible for all kinds of reasons.
I didn't even know the keystroke the other day. And I think Sean gave the keystroke for opening up, was it Copilot?
Yeah.
Was
Windows C.
Windows C?
Yeah.
So it's no longer going to open. What was it? Did it used to
Teams
open?
Teams chat. It used to open. Yes. I was confused as well.
Is this only Windows 11? Do I have to upgrade to Windows 11?
Oh, come on.
You mean, unbelievable.
You're not one of them, are you? We were talking about this just yesterday. I can't believe he's running this. You're one of the 69% still running
Windows. My battery
Windows
only
XP.
Runs an hour. Okay, so I'm waiting for my new computer before I can go to Windows 11. Because I went and pressed the key and nothing happened. So I'm going, okay, clearly Sean doesn't know the keystroke.
How dare you? Well, we did get an email from a listener saying it no longer works.
So they must be on Windows 10 also.
It must be a Windows 10, Windows 11 divide, yeah.
Yeah, mine still opens Cortana. So,
wow.
If you thought Siri was bad, try Cortana.
Talking of AI, Matt, and look, let's take it out of the realms of anything you're saying about Jaws or where it's going.
Sure.
But do you see screen readers in the future? Do you think something like Jaws or anything else, VoiceOver or NVDA, do you see it actually being in the same form factor? Do you think it'll be recognizable in, say, 5 years as to how we're so used to using screen readers now when AI is fully baked in?
I don't know. If you guys saw this the other day when I responded to you on this show, when I tried to leave a voicemail and I decided to talk like I'm using a text message.
Yes.
Embarrassing.
Hilarious. Well done. Yeah.
Adding period at the end of a sentence.
We all did it.
We've all done it, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so I don't think that our speech patterns are at a point where I'm going to give up the keyboard for what I do. Does that mean that that's everything that AI is speech? No. But there's some things that, like, I still going to have to do through a keyboard. I still like reading an email a certain way. I still like going back and hearing something. Somebody once said, well, wouldn't you just like to hear Lady A, I think is what you guys say,
yes,
read your emails to you? Well, yeah, if I don't need to pay attention to every little bit, like maybe for my Gmail, but not for my work email.
And then as well as that, you've got to think about responding to that email and what the response would be like if you're dictating it.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, editing a dictation sometimes is okay, but editing it with a keyboard is way easier.
Yeah.
And so the one thing I was on the phone with a colleague recently, and I asked him how he's thinking about AI right now, and he goes, well, the one thing AI is doing is making me dumber. Because he's doing more things through AI. Like the comment that you gave Sean on the other day on the show was pressing Windows C to have it and then ask it to summarize the page. Well, you don't have to read the page anymore because it just summarized it for you. It's like everything's Cliff Notes. Everything's, what was the, used to get the Something for Dummies book, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's what it feels like right now, that at some point there are things, I believe it's going to do a lot of good things for us, but at the same time, if we give up everything we do to AI, I think it's probably going to be a problem.
I've said this for a long time, Matt. I've said, you know, when Google search came along, we didn't have to remember anything. Now AI is here. We don't need to know anything.
Oh, you do? I'll tell you, I bookmark every page I find because Google search next time will, it may be six pages past where I am, and that's painful.
Well, because that's changed so much, hasn't it, with algorithms and everything else?
Oh, my goodness, it's terrible. Well, not because of Google, just because of the volume of stuff.
Yeah, but you could make the same argument for any new technology, emerging technology, right? Did everyone's spelling get worse when spell checkers became the norm?
Probably.
Yes, I believe it. I totally believe it did. But it's just, hey, well, the spell checker, catch it. We don't need to worry about that anymore. Is that a good or a bad thing?
Yeah, I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying that I don't think it will replace everything we do with a screen reader.
No.
The other AI tool I wanted to bring up, because you guys have talked about it, is Humane. And I haven't received mine yet. So as soon as I do, I'll give you my feedback. Because I did the order back in November, like as soon as the first day it was available to order. But it, I They said it would be out by now. They now give me my money back on shipping. Who knows if they'll start giving money back on the product at some point when they don't ship. But it's interesting. The issue about the, you know, there's some rumors that they're trying to solve some of the accessibility stuff. I think you guys mentioned Brian Bashan, I think, had reached out to them, or I think it was him. It may have been somebody else you mentioned. The big issue for me is that in the United States, we have laws around communications devices. And it's the 20th Century Communications Act, 21st Communications Act. And it was like 2010. And basically anything, and somebody's going to write in and correct me on the exact term, so have fun with that.
This is double tap. They're used to that.
We need reasons for them to write and complain.
We're kind of accurate, kind of not.
Listen, Laura, who reads our emails, has enough to do, right? I mean, come on. This woman has to almost retire.
She's great at that, by the way. She's awesome at that. So in that, my understanding is this would qualify as, by the fact that you can make phone calls with it, this would qualify under the FCC laws for accessibility, which basically makes sure that you can fully communicate with the device. So if we can't, and this is why smartphones became accessible in the United States completely. This wouldn't have happened. I love the everything everybody's done when it came from some of the smartphone technology and stuff. When Apple did all the stuff they did, and they did it before the laws actually went into effect. So great. But if you really want to look at it, without these laws, nobody'd be forced to, which is why our televisions have it, why our DVRs have it, is all because of the FCC in the United States. And so, and I'm not saying you don't have the same laws or different laws in Canada and in the UK and other places around the world, but they were the big player in this. So I believe Humane is going to be facing a major challenge if they do not solve this problem, because it will be an FCC complaint, and that's not somewhere you want to be. So I'll be looking forward to seeing where this goes.
Matt, I want to talk to you about CSUN, because you were there, and I mean, we'll get to the Stevie Wonder moment in just a moment, because you know everybody has a Stevie Wonder story, but you had a bit more of a personal one than perhaps most did. But I want to sort of get your take from CSUN, because we've talked a lot about the different announcements, the different companies. We're still featuring interviews on the show from on the floor in the exhibition. But what stood out for you? Anything new this year that you thought, wow, that's incredible, or that's different?
So I don't need to talk about AI, right?
No, we can skip that one.
That's okay, yeah. Good. Still a lot about object avoidance. This is stuff we talked about CES.
Yes, that's right.
It's still there, you know, from biped to
stop bumping into things, blind people.
And,
yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and I think Sean said this on a show. I'm giving Sean a lot of credit today.
Yeah. Thanks, Matt.
Someone's got to.
I think it was Sean. It could have been you. Could have been you, Stan.
Hey, but it might have been me.
Yeah, it could have just been a random too. But
hang on.
We still like the white cane, right? I think this was Sean.
No, I said that.
You said you can't live without the white cane?
Yes.
Okay. Let him have it. He'll only sulk.
Clearly, okay. I don't know what you guys sound like. You just accents. So
no offense taken.
So I still believe that the end game is still the white cane, or, you know, for some, the service dog. And so I struggle with some of that. I'm not saying that it's great that people are doing it. I think it's great that some people are out there and exploring different things, because I do believe they'll fit niches. The question is, will those niches be big enough for a global change? And I don't know that that's coming.
Well, that's a really interesting point, because you know, as we've talked about many times in the show, this is not the biggest market in the world for companies.
Yep.
So if you design something that only appeals to a niche within that group, that's tough. That's a tough sell. And it means the product price has to be very high. And, you know, a lot of money has to be spent by the people who actually bother to buy it. And is that sustainable for the company long term? So there's a big question about that. And, you know, I look at WeWalk, I look at Glidance, I look at Biped, and all of these companies are trying to come up with a solution that brings smart technology into these mobility aids. And I am with you. I think, and I've said this on the show many times, I'm all for innovation. But I do think that we, you know, have to sometimes stop the conversation of replacement of the cane or replacement of the guide dog. It should be a choice, and it should be something that is perhaps even goes along with. I mean, I think about Biped. I think about that one we talked about the other day, Sean, the strap tech device, which you wear.
Yeah.
You know, that gives you the information about chest height, head height information. That seems more interesting to me than replacing the cane. However, if something wonderful came along, of course I'm going to pay interest to it. Of course I'm going to pay attention to it. But I haven't seen it yet. I haven't seen it happen yet. And I think, you know, there's a lot of people struggling to afford to buy or find a white cane at the moment. Forget a smart cane.
I think the cane being $35 or whatever, I'm just throwing a number out in the US, versus something that's in the, you know, potentially $1,000 or more. The question is, who's going to fund it? And will state agencies in the US, will blinded veterans, you have something similar here in the UK, in Canada, are they going to fund this? Or is this going to be up to the individual? If it's up to the individual, they're not going to be able to afford it.
No, 90% of people in our community won't be able to afford it. Simple as that.
And speaking of the cane, I did want to mention to Stephen, when I ordered on Amazon my cane, it did show up in 24 hours. So it must be, This one, I think, was Stephen.
Yes, that's right. I took this to the hotel that I was staying in that weekend because I wanted to show a friend of mine I was meeting this cane.
Showing off your cane.
I thought I'd take it and show it off. Because you're keeping a nice little bag. It was a little black bag, a little velvety
thing.
It was
really
nice.
It's really cool, isn't it?
Yeah. So I put it in there and then I put it in my bag and then I left the hotel and I've never found it since. Until yesterday, it arrived.
So my complaint. I found it. My complaint on this one is, and this is how we, this is really important. The loop does not go around the cane.
Well, you've got to force it. It does do it, but you've got to force it. I think I also managed to unravel my loop.
Don't you always squash your fingers in that when you're trying to force it around your cane, when you're trying to fold it up? Yeah, you see, the cane needs smartening up in some way. And if only there was some sort of GPS tracker built in, wouldn't that be amazing?
I think there's some great enhancements. Let's say
it's a time to replace
a sensor to tell us when there's a water puddle. That would be nice.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
You swish through it.
A bottle opener.
Okay.
Oh, that's a good. Mind you, if that gets caught on you, I mean, aside you getting jabbed.
No,
with
but
it,
you could have the top be a screw off, right? And then have the cork in there or something.
There was a company here. Sean, remember that company?
Flask.
I think it was out of the UK, and it was called Gizzahand. Remember that one?
Yes.
And
this
was
a light,
and it had a light in it, but it also had a phone charger built in.
Well, that makes sense. Basically, you're just building in a battery charger in there, aren't you? To plug in.
As
USB
long as you're
things.
Not trying to walk while dangling the cable from your.
I think some people did. Yeah, I think some people probably did. But I mean, we've always got wires hanging from us as blind people. It's the way it goes. I mean, until Bluetooth came along, that was pretty much blind life. Wires hanging from every bit of us.
Going back, we seem to be drowning under mobility tech right now, right? And it's all quite nearly ready. It's, you know, all in the showing it off phase. But it's so different using something on a show floor or in a corridor somewhere on, you know, at an event than it is when you're actually using it outside in real life during your commute or, you know, going through a hotel, whatever it may be. I just wonder how practical these things are. How many times have you, you know, you've got a liquid level indicator, for example, and you barely use it because, you know, I just stick my finger in this cup of tea or whatever it is. I mean, when it comes down to actually people, real people using this technology and the, you know, if you get either bought for you through some sort of government scheme, employment scheme or whatever, I just wonder if this technology is actually good enough that people will use it and not just, I want to try this out and now I've used it for a week and it's just going to sit in a drawer. That's my fear with this.
I think that happens a lot more than you think.
I have several of these devices that I have not pulled out of. When I had to clean my office out one day, I cleaned it out. Some things gone into a box and I haven't seen them again. So I totally understand where you're coming from. I do believe that when you try it on a show floor, it's not the same as trying it in real life. You know, what is it like going down a street? What is it like going into a subway?
And consistency. I mean, it may work fine one day, but is that consistent enough to make it truly useful?
Well, one of the benefits of the white cane itself is there's no charging it.
Yeah.
Pick up. You're never going to be worried that you got a full charge that night, right? And that it's going to last all day. And I'm not saying these other devices won't, but like you never have to worry about it.
But that really matters, because this is our mobility aid. It's not something we take with us for fun.
Sure.
You know, if my cane breaks on the move, that's it. I have to call a cab or an Uber or whatever and get me home quick, because that's the only way out of that situation. I'm not going to be able to just walk on and carry on as if nothing's happened.
I had broken the tip off of mine in New York City in one of the grates. And I only had one cane on this trip, which is dumb. You never travel with one cane when you're traveling to a city. Yeah. And so this is when I ended up with the Amazon cane, but it was shipped to Florida because that's where I was flying. So now I have a cane that's probably 5 inches shorter than normal with no tip on the end, right? So it's not really useful. And I'm calling around and I find somebody who tells me that there's a place where I could buy a white cane 2 blocks down. Seriously, how? You couldn't have even made this up. It was that close. And I figured my damaged cane could make it 2 blocks. So I go down there and buy the cane, but they only took cash. Thank God I had the $35 in cash. Bought the cane, and it's been my cane since. It's solid as a rock. It's not going to break in a grate. But those are the kinds of things that the one thing that could happen on a trip. And so, you know, the advice for people who do a lot of travel is always carry a backup. You know, I have the telescoping cane as a backup in my bag that would be the last resort.
But can you imagine if you had bought the smart cane and it cost you, I don't know, $500 or $600, and that's
the only one you carry? Yeah, you shouldn't carry.
And
just
that's all you've got. Yeah. I mean, can you imagine? And aside to anything else, the cost. I'd be lying at the side of the street crying, curled up in a ball, thinking, goodness, now I've got to spend another $600 to replace this thing.
You just claim on your cane insurance. Everyone knows that. It's all fine.
Is that a
it's
thing?
Another
is it?
Subscription
oh,
model.
I must look that up immediately after the show. Yeah, okay, look, let me ask you about Stevie Wonder, Matt, because, of course, you got the chance to stand next to him while he did a speech at, was it one of your receptions in the evening?
Yeah, Vispero has a kind of reception for customers and partners and employees at CSUN every year. It's usually held on a Thursday night. It's the last night of the show, and we, you know, had it outdoors this year. And prior to the reception, I asked Stevie if he wanted to say a few words to people, and he said yes, he did. And I thought it was great.
Yeah, well, someone caught it on camera, so let's play that in. Let's actually hear what Stevie Wonder had to say at your event.
It is always an honor to be here, to come to this convention, but a chance to thank all of the people who are making it possible for us, those who are blind, with low vision, with disabilities of any kind, to make it possible for us to see the world, to have complete inclusion on this planet is such a wonderful thing and such a blessing. So as much as I would thank the writer of the first song that I had to become number one that I didn't write, as excited as I was about that, I'm as excited today to say to all of you, thank you. And you are the reason with what you've done and what you're doing makes it possible for me to not only have technology that I can use to write, but as well to discover the world to write more about. I thank you, and I thank you, and we are the ones who are going to make America true again. Thank you.
Yes.
It meant a lot to the community just for him to stand up there for a couple minutes to speak. You know, to talk about what it means to him and to the community and to thank people. Keeping in mind that CSUN is not just an assistive technology conference, but also an accessibility conference. The assistive technology people hear from customers every day for what our products do for them. Every day. The accessibility folks who are out there helping companies make their websites, kiosks, mobile apps accessible, they don't hear from the end user that often. And so for our staff, and there was, you know, we had 60 some odd folks from Vispero, from all the different divisions at CSUN. For our employees who do web and mobile and kiosk accessibility, it meant so much to them to be at CSUN, to not just hear from Stevie Wonder, but the community at large, to hear what accessibility means to them. And so for Stevie to stand up and do that thank you for not just our staff, but everybody who was there, from, you know, eBay to, you know, Google to Facebook or whoever was in the room, because I don't know all the companies that were there, you know, having him say something like that, you know, publicly is really a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. Matt, it's been great catching up with you. Safe travels through London and back home. And come back soon. Tell us more about what's going on at JAWS. Tell us more what's going on with kiosks. Keep us up to date.
Thank you.
Thanks, Matt.
And that is it for another show. Thank you so much for listening. Matt there, of course, pleased to hear from you, which is kind of unusual.
Yes, that is a surprise. Well done. Thanks for pointing that out. Someone was happy to see me. Yes, but Matt is an amazing guy. Does a great job. And he's always great to talk to. Thank you, Matt.
Absolutely. Listen, we are also on YouTube, you may be aware. You can go check out our content there. You can also catch up with a conversation Matt and I had about his experience when he was in Las Vegas. He was there for CES earlier in the year, and he visited the Las Vegas Sphere.
Oh, that sounds so cool.
Or Sphere, I don't know.
Anyway. Whatever it is, it's a landmark. It's like a wonder of the world.
Yeah, it is. It's incredible. Yes, back to that again. Well done. Full circle. That's it for today. Don't forget, Best of YouTube on at the weekend. You can find that here on the podcast feed and also on AMI Audio. We'll catch you Monday for more. Thanks, Sean. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Hello, I'm Sean Preece. Join me monthly for Sean of the Shed, where I introduce you to all the technology that can be so useful to us as blind or partially sighted people. Find Sean of the Shed wherever you find all your podcasts.